I think I'm a lot more accepting of probably a lot of things in life than I was before I did it. It's kind of a vague sense that I'm able to relax more with various situations than I would have been.
I heard all these people talking about how great it was and just this really great creative experience and strong queers, music, art, film, workshops, and all about community, and I just wanted to be part of it.
The only one thing that can make you my lady.
Without these bands, I wouldn't be alive.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Honduran activists win the right to advocate, self-awareness and pride meet the Buddha along the path, and a small town go-goes homo for a queer cultural festival. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 11th, 2004. After 15 years of rejection, three gay and lesbian groups have won official recognition from the government of Honduras. With their new legal identity, the Kukulkan group, the Sampedrana gay community, and the Violet Collective now have standing to act officially with government agencies and courts. Honduras still criminalizes homosexual acts, but Deputy Justice Minister Fernando Suazo emphasized that all Honduran citizens have the right to association. He labeled the long delay in recognizing the group's discrimination and expressed hope that the government's action will help overcome anti-gay prejudice. But Honduran Catholic and evangelical Christian leaders were quick to denounce the government's action as implying that homosexuality is acceptable. They called it sinful and deviant and said gays and lesbians should not be tolerated. To counter that criticism, about 50 gays and lesbians demonstrated outside the Congress this week to urge Honduran President Ricardo Maduro not to revoke their long-awaited legal status.
There was also religious criticism of gay association of another kind this week, as Roman Catholic Pope John Paul II denounced legal marriage of same-gender couples in his first meeting with Canada's new ambassador to the Vatican, Donald Smith. Four Canadian provinces are already marrying gay and lesbian couples because of court rulings, and national legislation is expected in the coming year. The pontiff declared that any attempts to change the meaning of the word spouse contradict right reason. Legal guarantees analogous to those granted to marriage cannot be applied to unions between persons of the same sex without creating a false understanding of the nature of marriage. Smith advised the Pope that the Canadian Parliament would determine the issue. More than 40% of Canadians identify as Roman Catholics, including Prime Minister Paul Martin.
The definition of spouse was also at issue this week in Germany, where a court refused to recognize a gay male couple's marriage in the Netherlands, Deutsche Presseagentur reported. The Netherlands was the first nation in the world to extend full marriage equality to same-gender couples. A Taiwanese man had applied for a residence permit to join his Netherlander spouse in Germany, as European Union immigration rules allow. But the Karlsruhe Administrative Court rejected his claim, saying that each EU member nation has the authority to define spouse in its own way. Although Germany offers registered partnerships for gay and lesbian couples that carry some marriage-like benefits, the nation issues marriage licenses only to heterosexual couples.
A California court this week affirmed that domestic partnership is not the same as marriage. But in this case, that finding was helpful to same-gender couples. Two religious right groups had filed a lawsuit to block an expansion of the benefits and responsibilities attendant on the U.S. states' registered partnerships that will go into effect in the new year. They said that the upgrade will make those partnerships marriage in all but name, and claimed that would violate the terms of Proposition 22, a ballot initiative affirmed by a large majority of voters in 2000 that said the state would recognize only marriages between one man and one woman. But Sacramento County Superior Court Judge Lauren McMaster rejected that challenge by the Campaign for California Families and the Proposition 22 Legal Defense and Education Fund, writing that simply because the legislature deemed it to be in the best interests of the state of California to give domestic partnership rights that are substantially the same as those enjoyed by persons who are married does not change the definition of marriage. The plaintiffs planned to appeal, and one even said the judge should be recalled. Defending the expansion of partnership benefits under AB 205 was the job of California Attorney General Bill Lockyer. He welcomed the ruling, telling reporters that, as we argued in court, if proponents of Proposition 22 wanted voters to deny certain benefits to couples who register as domestic partners, they should have said so. In fact, the campaign for Proposition 22 had actually featured some assurances that it was intended only to preserve marriage and not to interfere with the recognition of domestic partnerships.
A court in the U.S. state of Washington has found that state's law restricting marriage exclusively to heterosexual couples violates the state constitution. Thurston County Superior Court Judge Richard Hicks wrote that one part of the community cannot be given a privilege that is not given to other members of the community unless the government can demonstrate how that discrimination furthers the benefit of the entire community. Hicks found the law did not meet a strict scrutiny standard, emphasizing that, for the government, this is not a moral issue, it is a legal issue. Hicks ruled in a case brought by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of 11 gay and lesbian couples. Last month, King County Superior Court Judge William Downing reached a similar decision in a case brought by Lambda Legal on behalf of 6 same-gender couples. The Washington State Supreme Court is expected to consider the 2 lawsuits together.
U.S. President George W. Bush's vocal support for amending the federal Constitution to restrict marriage exclusively to heterosexual couples has lost him the endorsement of the National Gay and Lesbian Log Cabin Republicans. It's the first time since Log Cabin opened its national headquarters in 1993 that the group has withheld its endorsement from the party's presidential nominee. That's the strongest action the 12,000-member group can take since its own constitution prohibits it from endorsing another party's candidate. Log Cabin's board of directors rejected Bush this week by an overwhelming vote of 22-2. Chair William Brownson said the board decided to shift our financial and political resources to defeating the radical right and supporting inclusive Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives.
Another U.S. national organization has shut down. LEGO, the National Latino Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Organization. Although there has not yet been an official public announcement, all LEGO employees have been laid off. A recent audit found a $500,000 deficit that continues to increase. 2 years ago, LEGO's total budget was nearly $3 million. Much of that came from government grants through the Centers for Disease Control for HIV/AIDS programs. LEGO, more than a decade old, has been the only national voice in the U.S. for the Latino, lesbian, gay, and transgender community.
Jamaican dancehall reggae music artists whose lyrics have called for the murder of gay men have begun to pay a price for that homophobia. The British direct action group Outrage has been protesting on this issue for a decade, but in recent weeks the world has begun to pay more attention. That may be due in part to the June murder of Jamaica's best-known gay activist Brian Williamson, as well as to Outrage coordinating its protest efforts with other groups in Europe, Jamaica, and the U.S., as well as in the U.K. A month ago, British police and prosecutors began to seriously review the possibility of bringing criminal charges against the artists for incitement to violence. Britain's annual nationally broadcast Music of Black Origin Awards, MOBO, have long been a center of this controversy, but this year changed their tune. Saying they didn't wish to publicly promote anti-gay lyricists, MOBO organizers excluded from consideration 2 of the most notorious offenders, Beanie Man and Buju Banton. However, the finalists they selected included Elephant Man and Vibes Cartel, some of whose past works are just as vicious. Under pressure, MOBO asked those artists to apologize in writing for their earlier anti-gay lyrics. Neither complied, and MOBO went on to withdraw their nominations. A number of British venues have also been canceling these artists' concert dates.
Beanie Man, a past Grammy winner, has also faced numerous cancellations and pickets in both the U.S. and Canada on his current North American tour. Most damagingly, MTV dropped him from a concert in Florida associated with its MTV Video Music Awards, partly in response to the threat of a demonstration by local gay groups. Buju Banton suffered similar indignities in Europe. He was warned by sportswear giant Puma not to perform any anti-gay material at a concert they sponsored in association with the Olympic Games. He also suffered cancellations of at least 3 performances in Germany, including the Reggae Jam Festival in Saarbrücken. The German gay and lesbian civil rights group LSVD sought advice about possible incitement charges against the singer, a move also supported by German Member of Parliament and Human Rights Commissioner Claudia Roth. Buju Banton was also threatened with incitement charges in advance of appearances in the Netherlands in August. Other artists targeted by protesters for their Kill Gays songs include Bounty Killer and Capleton.
And finally, openly lesbian French tennis pro Amélie Mauresmo will be number one in the world when the new Women's Tennis Association rankings are published in the coming week. Those rankings are based solely on a mathematical formula, so there's no doubt of this outcome. She may well be the first gay or lesbian athlete to reach the top of any sport after publicly coming out. And while 25-year-old Mauresmo had set the number one ranking as a personal goal, she also reached that pinnacle in a rather queer way. She's won 13 tournaments in her career, including three this year, but she's only the second woman to reach the top rank without winning any of the four Grand Slam tournaments.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 11th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We'll follow the trail of the edgiest of queer cultural workers into the land of Homo Agogo later in the program. Many lesbian, gay, bi, and trans people remain committed to exploring their spirituality, even while their right to do so is being fiercely debated in most of the world's major religious traditions. Like the Abrahamic religions, Buddhism does not universally approve of homosexuality. The Dalai Lama has said he believes it amounts to sexual misconduct for Buddhist practitioners. But even the Dalai Lama supports human rights for all people, regardless of sexual orientation. And many queers find that atmosphere of tolerance pervasive in the Buddhist community. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching has the story of two members of a Canadian queer Buddhist study group in Vancouver, British Columbia.
The first noble truth is the truth of suffering.
Jason Colantonio is giving me a lesson in Buddhism 101.
Partly because of the illusion that we have that we're separate from everything around us. Second is that essentially the ego is the cause of that suffering, so it's about the cause of the suffering.
Jason, along with Jan Grew, is a member of Queer Dharma, a queer Buddhist meditation and study group based at Vancouver's Shambhala Center.
The fourth noble truth is also known as the Eightfold Path, which is the various aspects of that of the path that you do, including, of course, meditation. There are other practices as well. But
Shambhala centers exist throughout North America and were founded in the 70s by the Buddhist teacher Chogyam Trungpa. His goal was to introduce the benefits of Buddhist meditation and philosophy to Westerners who don't necessarily have a powerful interest in Buddhist religious practice. Today, the centers are home to both religious and secular practitioners, and several centers host groups similar to Queer Dharma. Jan and Jason both identify as Buddhists, but most of the members of Queer Dharma don't. Some identify as Buddhist curious. But whatever their spiritual identity, queers attending the group find that meditation helps them to get to know themselves better and to manage the stresses of today's world.
In our lives, if we think about it, there's really nothing that we can control apart from our mind. Sitting practice gives you the chance to actually watch your mind, and because you can watch your mind, it gives you a little separation between whatever you are and your mind, whatever your mind is. And with that separation, you can learn about yourself, and it is about self-awareness. So for me, it's made me very aware of my motivations in life. I had this insight while I was meditating, and it was kind of shocking, actually. It was because I was having car trouble, and the engine of my car was kind of going, and I was having anxiety about it, and I was having fear and anger and all these emotions. And trying to understand why me. I was really feeling victimized. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, these images came up. And one was of a time when I was, like, taking change out of my father's pockets when I was a kid. I would steal money out of his pockets. And then the other was all the mechanics that I've gone to over the years and expected something for nothing. And not that I would attribute this car trouble necessarily to karma. But it just did make me aware of past behaviors and past mindsets, and it gave me a chance to actually change that.
When you're doing the sitting practice, you are working with your own mind. Because, of course, as you're doing the practice, your mind interrupts and throws out its sort of daily menu of thoughts. You know, a lot of it is your reaction to the world around you. So as you begin to accommodate aspects of your own mind and personality, of course, you can begin to accommodate the foibles of the world around you, which doesn't mean it's not sort of political sort of acquiescence. It's more, you know, just learning how to, I guess, coexist in a lot of ways.
The type of meditation practiced at Queer Dharma is called shamatha. To do it, you simply sit upright in a chair or on a cushion with your spine erect, your chin tucked in a bit, and your eyes open but not focusing on anything in particular. From there, you simply focus on your breath. Each time you notice your mind wander, you simply acknowledge your thoughts, let them go, and come back to your breath. The goal is simply to accept the events of your mind without judgment. According to numerous scientific studies, the benefits of meditation are far-reaching. They range from lower blood pressure to decreased neurosis, improved creativity, increased pain tolerance, decreased substance abuse, improved problem-solving abilities, and greater stress tolerance. Indeed, while they don't point to anything quite so dramatic, Jan and Jason both say they've noticed changes in themselves since they started meditating.
I think I'm a lot more accepting of probably a lot of things in life than I was before I did it. It's kind of a vague sense that I'm able to relax more with various situations than I would have been before I started practicing. When you stick with the practice for a certain length of time, you begin to notice this over sort of the long term. It doesn't happen immediately. I mean, when you discover a practice like this, of course, you have the novelty of the practice, and you know, you're high basically for a little while, but at some point that crashes. Because you realize it's not going to take you away from yourself. Now, what makes you stick with it, of course, is that you you just frankly get addicted to it. even as much as you're being shown of all of the, you know, all the sort of uncomfortable stuff. So eventually you do. You start to take yourself less seriously, which I think is kind of the major point.
I can definitely relate to that, yeah. One of the first things I noticed was more time between hearing something like negative or seeing something negative and having a reaction to it. So there's been more space in my thinking in terms of if I'm under pressure and there's a stressful situation, I don't solidify things and think, oh, it's all going to happen this way. I consider alternatives, and there's more of a relaxation, and I definitely take myself less seriously.
For more information on the network of Shambhala centers throughout North America, or for more information on how to meditate, visit www.shambhala.org. Shambhala is spelled S-H-A-M-B-H-A-L-A. For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, or for audio cassette subscription information, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. Thanks to Alternabid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out auction area at alternabid.com.
The small scenic town of Olympia, Washington became a queer cultural mecca last month when artists, musicians, writers, filmmakers, and activists showcased their talents at Homo Agogo. The week-long festival was a venue for underground, do-it-yourself artistic expression and the overlapping radical politics that go with it. Some of the performers and participants share their experiences with This Way Out correspondent Indy McCasey.
And it gets better.
My name is Amy Ray. I'm from Indigo Girls, and I've heard about Homo Agogo
I guess the first year that it started, actually, I heard all these people talking about how great it was and just this really great creative experience and queer, strong queers, music, art, film, workshops, and all about community. And I just wanted to be part of it. I've always wanted to be part of it.
Olympia, Washington, home of the Evergreen State College and birthplace of Riot Grrrl music, has long been on the cutting edge of underground and alternative movements. Following in the footsteps of other Olympia-originated festivals like Yo-Yo Ogogo and Ladyfest, Homo Ogogo offers a particularly queer flavor to the independent music scene. Dozens of volunteers helped put on this biennial event, which included workshops to learn about safe sex, challenge Zionism, and make your own screen print. As a self-identified queer from Seattle, I want to see what a smaller town would look like with hundreds of other queers, dykes, trannies, femmes, genderqueers, and gays spilling into its streets. I took a mini disc recorder with me to interview performers and participants ranging in age from 19 to 54 and from places as far away as Australia, Los Angeles, Bosnia, and Boston. Here's Mira, a singer-songwriter who began her career in Olympia.
I think that it's good for the town, good for like non-festival goers, and I just like having all the energy in the street and that feeling of like bigness, like we are big and we're kind of big in the town for a part of a week. It's nice.
Cheryl Coward, a writer from Boston, thought that the festival served as a vital resource, especially for youth.
Homo Ogogo is in general is great because it's queers creating art and sharing their art from all over the country and all over the world. People are so isolated in their various communities around the country, and it's a good way for you to connect and see what other people are doing, and especially for the younger people so they don't feel so isolated in their own communities and get support and feedback from others.
Sarah, a 19-year-old from Long Beach, California, told me how music saved her life.
The musicians here especially, like, they helped me so much living in an area where I was the only out person at my middle school, the only out person at my high school. And just without these bands, I wouldn't be alive. I wouldn't have been able to handle it if I didn't have that outlet, like the music to go to know that there are other people out there like me, because there's still places where kids grow up where you don't know there's other people like you, and you don't know, you know, why you want to dress the way you do, or why you are the way you are, why your mannerisms are the way you are, and why you don't, you know, fit into this little box, because everyone expects you to fit into this little box, and you just, it's just, this is my outlet.
The musicians Sarah was speaking about make up a who's who in the emerging queer independent music scene called queercore or homocore. They include well-known bands like Team Dresh, The Gossip, and The Butchies, as well as newer bands such as Tracing the Plastics, Lesbians on Ecstasy, and King Cobra. In addition to the music, one of my favorite events was Kvetch, an evening of spoken word organized by Boston artist Sarah Seinberg. I talked with Amy Madison, a featured poet at the event, about how her writing reflects her identity.
I identify as queer, genderqueer. I've spent a lot of time in lesbian and dyke communities. I identify as a person of color. I'm Chamorro, and mixed race. And a lot of my writing is about that.
Or I'm in an office with a questionnaire drawing a tiny X and a tiny, tiny square, because in this capitalist scene, you need a gender, name, and age for the privilege of earning minimum wage. Is it a boy? Is it a girl? Is it black? Is it white? I'm the lack in your imagination that just can't quite comprehend the difference you see or don't, which is the reason why you won't look at me. Look at me. I'm not a freak. I'm just another.
Despite the diversity of performers, it wasn't long before I saw that most of the people going to the shows were white. Cheryl Coward talked to me about her thoughts as to how the festival could have a stronger contingent of people of color.
Overall, I think that the diversity of the festival has been a lot better than other queer festivals like Ladyfest, but it could be better. I mean, it's still predominantly white. There's a larger contingent of people of color performing and attending, but that could always be better done better. And that always has to do with who's organizing and how the organizers reach out to people of color and how people of color perceive the festival.
One thing about Homo Ogogo that was pretty amazing was that, unlike other queer events I've been to, it wasn't just trans-inclusive, but trans-centered. Homo Ogogo's founder, Ed Varga, manages to create a festival that fuses radical politics with underground artistic expressions, all for a good cause. Proceeds from the festival will go to the Gender Variant Healthcare Project, an Olympia organization that provides support services and healthcare referrals for individuals who don't fit into gender binaries. Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls thinks that having these trans issues at the core of Homo Ogogo sends a message to the queer community.
I think the West, and especially the Northwest, is sort of on the cutting edge of the trans issues and issues around health and issues around awareness and issues around community health. Society falls into a sort of transphobic, sort of naturally place, you know, and the queer movement can do better than that. And we know it. And so this is the kind of thing that just being around this environment helps people that may not even have been introduced to what the trans movement is, because there are people that haven't been, you know, speaking from an East Coaster's perspective and from a 40-year-old.
Things I'll remember. Imani Henry's emotional performance, Before Tea, Before Testosterone. The Indigo Girls playing to a packed house in Olympia's historic and cozy Capitol Theater, the Shabbat in the alleyway, the reunited band members of Team Dresh ending their show by crowd surfing, and the buzz that surrounded the 3 days that I was there. I liked what Rhea from Vancouver had to say about taking this experience home with you.
So coming here and seeing all of these people that have the same ideas and the same way of living their lives is an amazing thing. And I think that it's really important to sort of carry that away with you back into your life when you walk out of Olympia and get back on the Greyhound or in the car or on the plane and go home, to take away that sense of community and try to sort of nurture that in your own space as well.
You heard music from The Gossip, Team Dresh, and Mira. For more information on Homo Ogogo, check out www.homoagogo.com. For This Way Out in Olympia, Washington, I'm Indy McCasey.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, and Indy McCasey contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle and Bruce Wirth. The Indigo Girls performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime, online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Only you can keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs, too. For all the details, please log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4CCR Cairns, Queensland, KALW San Francisco, California, MVS Radio Amsterdam, the Netherlands, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.